Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I want to welcome back Troy Dexter. He was on earlier in December 2016, and it seems like it was just like a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I can't believe it's been that long. He had come by on the show, and we had, we had a great time. He's back. We're going to talk about several different things, and joining us tonight, too, besides my very good friend Lori Reamer, and also Troy's wife, Holly, who's a singer, and some of the clips that we're going to play tonight feature Holly. So it'll be an interesting show where we'll talk about the relationship between Troy as not just as a guitar player but as an arranger and a producer working with a singer, and that type of interaction, which always intrigues me because each person I've talked to, it's a totally unique relationship, and it's interesting to explore. Anyway, first of all, welcome back. It's so great to see you again.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I've been enjoying several of the episodes. You do a great thing here. You do a great job at what you do, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. No, it's my pleasure. And, well, let's just get into it a little bit. Let's talk a little more about your session work. Now, we had mentioned before on the old show that you had played both guitar and mainly keyboards, I think, for Wilson Phillips.
Yeah, I am their keyboard player. I played guitar with them when I first joined, and then we had a little band switch around, and then I'm on keyboards now. So
yeah, but it's great. He's still a guitar player, and he brought my favorite Les Paul that he has here, the blue Les Paul.
Everybody's best friend right here.
Yes. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about, because you've done a lot of different session work. We kind of previewed a little bit about it, but I want to go in a little more depth, and which leads up to also to your latest album, your last album, Shop Talk, because you're doing arranging and producing and stuff. And let's talk a little bit about some of that type of session work. Like, for example, I just have to mention, you posted this morning... I think it was morning or yesterday.
Yeah, it was this morning.
This morning you posted you were doing a session. Tell us a little bit about that. That was kind of an interesting one.
As of lately, I've been working for a really, really talented guy named Robert Irving, who's a really good producer and keyboard player. And he has kind of made a career out of doing scoring, as of lately, scoring a lot of like cable channel movies and TV movies and things like that, with an occasional, you know, jingle thrown in or commercial or something like that. So you know, I was just goofing around with my phone in between takes, you know, as they were queuing up the next piece, and, you know, took a little goofy selfie. And it was just this morning was a funny session because Robert, who I greatly admire and I just think the world of, he and his wife are vegans. But the commercial that we were doing was for Omaha Steaks, you know, like it was like a jingle for Omaha Steaks, and he's like, this vegan, and it, you know, and I wasn't even awake. I mean, it was like at 8:30 in the morning, and I like kind of roll in with my this was just acoustic guitar and mandolin, and I roll in, and I'm like kind of like cross-eyed, and you know, and that's just kind of how I look at. Like, I just sort of observe. That's like, wow, this guy's like a total vegan, and she had brought me like this beautiful cup of coffee and this whole like Vitamix ginger smoothie thing that she had offered me. This is Robert's wife, and then you know, like up on the screen is like Omaha Steaks, you know, when we're like doing the music. It was just funny, and I just, you know, being me, I notice stuff like that. I think it's funny.
Now, did the producer say to him, I need more meat. I need more.
Oh no, we do laugh a lot, but it was you know, he was basically producing the session, and you know, it's been a nice thing. Actually, I mean, there's a sort of a sad story behind that. One of his friends, I think his name is Tim. I feel so bad. I can't remember his last name. But it was his next door neighbor, and he was his guitar player, and he passed of cancer. Oh. And I'm sure we have a million friends that know this guy, and his last name is escapes me right now. I feel bad, but anyway, we met through working with a great singer named Billy Trudell, and songwriter named Steve Epstein. Yeah. So that's how I knew Robert. And it sort of seems like I kind of slid in, and I'm doing a lot of work for him that this. His friend and next door neighbor Tim would have normally done, and they were, you know, partners for years and years before that. And, but anyway, we've struck up a nice friendship, and I work for him a lot, and it's very nice. So
you played both guitar and mandolin on this one?
On this particular session, yeah. And I will admit that I cheat, and from a clinic that I took with the great Tommy Tedesco years ago, he taught me how, or taught the clinic. He taught his secrets about mandolin, which is that he tunes it like a guitar, but you, because of the tension of the strings, you have to use a special gauge of strings. So it's basically mandolin strings, but it's like, let me see if I can get this right. The D string, which is the highest, goes up to an E. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's two B strings, and one goes, you know, down to an A, and one goes down to a G and that kind of thing, so, and then the D string. So
you use the Tedesco tuning, as we call it.
I use the Tedesco stringing and tuning. Yeah, so I'm not sure if I totally described that exactly right, but that's the idea. So and the reason is that so I can read, you know. But there's definitely guys like George Dering, and you know, even guys like Bruce Watson, and you know, there's a ton of guys that play like legit mandolin. Yeah, and I do not. So,
but it doesn't matter as long as it works. No, that's what Tommy used to say.
Exactly, it gets the sound across, and I can read, and it, you know, it just kind of makes things go a lot faster. So,
and he has a picture of him in front of the microphone. It's like a selfie, but you can see the microphone in front of him, and he has he had a Martin, and he brought the Martin down, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. It's a beautiful Martin acoustic that you had there, so it was kind of fun.
Thank you.
But. Well, okay, let's talk a little bit more now. I'm trying to figure out the best way to word this question. Your approach to production and arranging in terms of what do you do in terms of the artist? We can use Holly as an example, and then I can play something, but, well, whoever it is, I mean, I have a clip of Gloria Loring, and you've done that stuff with Victor.
That's right.
How do you approach it when you come into the project?
Well, I mean, I really try to get as much of the artist's vision, you know, kind of in my notes, if you will, in the sketching, the demos and stuff like that. And I just sort of have a rule that, like, you know, 90% of the time the artist is right in terms of what they're trying to get across, and they may or may not be musically literate or may not be able to articulate it, but it's my job as a producer to extract what they're trying to say. And really, one of the best ways to do it is to just say, hey, give me five examples of stuff you like, or like, you know, not to copy, but what's the direction
like
that we're going here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Like a website.
Like a website, yeah. Yeah, whose do you dig, you know? And so, and then from there, it's really about... about nailing the genre and really supporting the singer and supporting the song. It's not. I really hope that I've not been the type of producer to use an artist to, like, you know, show myself off, so to speak, or whatever.
So it's not your sound with the artist singing on top of it.
No.
It's their.
I mean, I will definitely offer suggestions and things that based on my history and what I'm familiar with and what I kind of dig or whatever. But I really ultimately try to support that artist, you know.
Now, what happens when, okay, you're doing the research on an artist and you're listening all the, and they have a catalog, so you see what the catalog is, mm-hmm. and then they come up to you and you go, I don't want to do that. I want something new.
You mean when the artist says that?
Yeah, where they want to go somewhere else. They don't want to go what you've heard. They want to go somewhere else with it. Because that would be, to me, would be, okay, where do I take them with, you know, that opens up a whole other...
Yeah, I mean,
has that happened to you?
Well, if I'm hearing you right, there have been times when, like, I've done, you know, I kind of have a pre-production meeting with an artist, and then that artist leaves, and I work for 8 hours, and then they come back. I say, you know, I say, come back at 4, 5, 6 o'clock, whatever. There's been one or two times with a particular client where they come back and it's like, you know, they walk in the room, I play them what I've done, and they're like, I don't like it. Do something else. And then they leave. It's like, and I just have to try something, you know, and of course I'll say, well, you know, more of this, less of this, you know, help me out here, you know, help me help you, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, no, I mean, in general, I think one of my strengths is getting in the DNA of a vision of a singer or a songwriter and you know, kind of keeping them updated along the way and, you know, making sure I don't have to double back,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing, so.
No, I mean, I think that's it's interesting because that you can take them somewhere else. Because usually that's why they're coming to see you. If they've been produced by somebody else, they obviously...
Yeah, and we talk about it first, like, hey, what if we put a clarinet on this? Or if we do a string section, like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And, you know, like, we're on the same page before moving forward in each step of that process or whatever, you know. So
you do a lot of pre-production?
Well, I mean, every album... or any project that I've worked on with a singer or a songwriter has always been, you know, my motto is, like, we start with a demo and we build on the demo. So
mm-hmm.
whatever we do, we don't throw away. We just replace and build and build and build. It's, you know. And
so everybody going into the studio when you're doing it for real, it's all clear. Everybody knows.
Totally clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm the kind of musician that I, you know, producer that I, you know, I'm musically literate and I have charts and, you know, I make it very, you know, I just want the, especially if you're hiring other people like drummers and bass players and stuff like that, I want it to go down fast, you know, time, mm-hmm. time is time. And,
yeah.
You know, so, yeah, so.
Now, in working with, let's use one of the songs that, that Holly sang that I have a clip for.
Yeah, cool.
Let me, I'm going to play this clip, and then I know this features a lot of you on guitar because I pulled these for the guitar parts, but I want to talk a little bit about the relationship and have Holly come in on this too.
Our therapist isn't here, so.
I'm going to go ahead and play this song called Cheap Wine and Cigarettes.
All
I'm going
right.
to play that, and you're doing a really great slide part on this.
Oh, thank you.
So let me play that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the behind the scenes of that. So here's Cheap Wine and Cigarettes.
Shelter.
Now, let me ask you, okay, let's break it down a little bit. When you originally heard the song, because I'm curious, we had talked to this about this on the other show a little bit, because you play keyboards and you play keyboards well, and I had asked you, you know, where do you go first? Do you go to guitar or keyboards? When you first heard the song, what was the demo like?
Gosh, we're going back, but no. I mean, in that time period, this would be late 90s, you know, Holly played some guitar, like songwriting guitar, enough to get her ideas out, and so she would kind of show me basic direction of the song.
So Holly,
Holly,
did you make a demo where you played just
I would just play it for him. I would come up with something and I would, you know, and then I'd play it for him. I have no idea what the chords are. I'd be like, I made this chord up. He's like, yeah, that's like a, you know,
that's
a,
like a C.
Yeah. He's like, I was like, look, I did, you know, because I'm completely self-taught and don't play well at all. But yeah, I would play it for him, and then I'd say, and then it changes here, but I don't know how to play it. But the chord is this.
You know? So you sang. Okay,
I would sing all the strings in the chord, but I could, and he would. Oh, that's this chord, and then he'd play. I'm not the easiest person to work with.
No, that's not. That's not uncommon. I've had sessions where they just gave me a vocal without any accompaniment, and you had to figure out.
I've had that where they, you know,
on the voicemail,
like, sing into my answering machine, and like the verse is in one key and the chorus is in a different day and another. You know,
yeah. Different day. Yeah.
I've had to make sense of that, she's got just, you know, besides being a great singer, she's got crazy, crazy good ears, you know, for harmony, not just vocal harmony, but like, you know, chords and inner voices of chords and things like that. And so she's could articulate to me that in that way, you know, what she wanted, and she basically had that groove. And so I would say on this song, it was sort of a guitar thing. And I
Okay, so from what she gave you was already there. Okay.
I mean, that to me is guitar. That's not a keyboard groove. That's a you know, that's a guitar thing. And the rhythm track, I think, you know, the stereo guitars and the rhythm track of that song kind of reflect that. And not too much keyboards, a little sort of.
Now, what's interesting about the cut, and we had talked a little bit about this before the show while we were setting up, is your approach to, as an arranger, as a producer, and as a guitarist, how you bring out that lyric. Now, Holly's singing it and delivering it, her phrasing, that's a major part of making that lyric work. But now what you're doing around her, like with the slide fills and just the way the guitars lay under her vocal, that brings out that lyric. To me, it made it just, you know,
it complements it,
but more than that, it brings it to the forefront without necessarily having Holly, for example, you know, you could just mix her up really high. So there's all this interaction that's going on, but you hear it accents the lyric and accents what you're saying. So, but I wanted to ask you about that, because that's an art. I mean, that's not, there are great accompanists, but the way you brought out, you're working. Do you react to her phrasing and stuff like that? Because she's a great phraser, by the way, Holly. That's vocal phrasing.
Well, you know, I learned how to play and arrange basically from songs versus, like, you know, guitar records, if you will. You know, like, I learned how to play listening to, you know, everything from Eagles, Doobie Brothers to Sinatra, and all of those records, the way that they were produced, are in such support of the singer and the song. So in this case, I'm arranging 101, if you will, is just, you know, fill in the holes where she's not singing and base what you're playing on, you know, if you're going to like ad lib as I'm doing in this song, if I'm going to ad lib around the vocal, try to grab something from what she just sang or, you know, do an inverted version of it, or retrograde, or, you know, or
like
just
an answer,
almost.
And, you know, and
and if I can pipe in on that,
please,
too, I mean, we did corporate gigs together for many, many years, too, and he would get so mad when a guitar player or any musician would mm-hmm. step on the vocal. He would always be like, God, don't step on the vocal. Mm-hmm. And he has a great sensitivity to a singer. I think he's a really nuanced player. He's tasteful and he's nuanced and he's not trying to prove how much he knows in every line. You know, he comes in where it matters and he really lets go where the appropriate place is, and it's more powerful that way, you know,
right.
than if he's competing with the singer.
Yeah, and I mean, there's thank you, honey.
You're welcome.
and I always kind of approached live gigs, you know, with like as if I was making a live record. I don't want to like crap it up with, you know, overplaying and all that stuff. It always drove me nuts, but I can only imagine how it feels to a singer to be stepped on by a horn player, just, you know, constantly noodling or blowing or whatever.
I've seen it in my own gigs that I've done where piano players just fill
yeah.
every hole,
yeah.
and you don't always need to do that. But let me ask you this.
You do not. Note to flowery piano players, other, you do not.
Now, did you sing? Did you sing a lot in your early days and stuff?
I did, and I, you know, I am like a B-minus singer, and I used to sing a lot on these corporate gigs and stuff just to give the real singers a break and stuff like that, and I sang on some recordings and on our records background, but...
Well, no, the reason I'm asking that is...
My focus is elsewhere. But.
No, but that tells me that, you know, phrasing, because you sang, so you understand when they need to take a breath, and you understand... Where
well, and I'm also, you know, again, I'm not like a great singer, but... There are singers now and from years and decades gone by that just freaking drop me, man. I mean, just that's, you know, every instrument is trying to be a singer, you know. And mm-hmm. so I'm just all about that emotion. I'm all about that phrasing. I'm all about breathing. So it's, you know, like taking breaths when I'm playing guitar. And you know,
well, that's another thing that when you do a riff or a lead, if you breathe like a singer, it has a different dimension yeah. to it. It sounds more organic or more vocalized.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of myself as someone who tells stories, and you know, where I'm not a shredder kind of a person. I like to tell a story, and to mm-hmm. tell a story, you have to breathe, you have to take breaths, you know, and it just.
Carmen was talking about that too, right?
That's mm-hmm. right. I actually, right. Yeah, that was a great interview. Yeah. Carmen, buddy.
Carmen Grillo, are you listening?
Love him.
Because he was watching a lot of what the horn players were playing and how they phrase, and it influenced a lot of what he was doing. And he was doing lines with the horns. And again, it's another type of breath, but it's similar to vocals. I mean, it's
no question. No, he made a funny remark, man. If I remember listening to his, it's like, if you have to make music with your face. I love that line.
But now, Holly.
I LOL'd.
Holly, in terms of that song, you said you had told him, okay, I want the chords basically here, and you gave him an idea, and then I want to go to this transition. How much in what you heard in your head and what he arranged was it different, or did it come out pretty much how you expected it to be? That's an interesting.
Honestly, you know, he has such good intuition, and I have to say too, you know, he's especially good at working with women artists because he did grow up in a house full of women.
That'll work.
So he's sensitive and he listens, and he's really easy. I mean, you know, we had our marital issues sometimes in the studio where just like not communicating enough, you know, he'd do a take and then not say anything, and I'm in there with the headphones on. Well, did you like it? Do you want me to redo it? What do you want me? Oh, sorry, I forgot to tell you. We're doing the next part, you know. But that was the only thing that we ever had issues with. But I mean, he's very intuitive about, he really understands the vision, and he's so musical.
Mm-hmm.
He just gets it, and he goes there fast. And it's not just me. I mean, I've seen him do it with everyone, with Wilson. That's why the girls in Wilson Phillips love him so much, is because he listens, he gets it, he understands what they want, and he goes there, you know. So
I think the important thing there is you listen. And as musicians, as guitarists, as we play with a vocalist or we play in a band, I can't stress that enough. You have to listen to everybody else. Then that'll tell you what to play. You know what I'm saying?
Most, I mean, that's like a sacred thing, man, is peripheral listening. I don't know if that's a real word, but just like, you know, not just listening to yourself, but listening to just everything.
Yeah.
Everything that's going on stage or in the studio. And I want to go back to when we were talking about us working together in those days. And I want to stress, you know, just communication and with the artist, you know, through the headphones. And sometimes you're not in the same room, and you know, you can't even see each other, and you know, the vocal booth is somewhere else. I mean, just often and good and supportive communication is paramount. And I wasn't great at it at first, and part of the reason is because in those days, in the mid '90s. I was really just learning how to engineer. And so, like, I'd get the keys to the studio after hours that I would work at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'd come in to kind of chip away at our own project. And I was just learning how to, like, you know, work the equipment and the board and mm-hmm. the knobs. And I had, like, so much on my mind, you know. And she's, you know, I would just say something stupid. And she, like, had given up her soul on a take, you know, and all this. And she goes, oh, how was that? I kind of, like, press the talk back button and go, do another one.
What?
You know, but the reason that I was just lame at it is because I, like, was, like, twisted, not making sure all the button. Yeah, I mean, right. All the...
Oh, that just, happened, too. Yeah. I'd, like, sing my heart. Oh, I forgot to press record.
Oh, sorry, that one overdrove a little. You know, I had it too high or something. You know, I was just learning how to, like, twist all the knobs and pay attention to all the metering and everything like that. And so I was sort of, like, not a human being, you know, but...
Well, that's the thing. It can be intimidating for the person outside in the studio because they'll stop and you just see them talking and they're real serious. But they're not necessarily talking about you. They're like, well, okay, maybe I'm going to double that and, you know, the string's got to stay out of there. Or, you know, they're talking about all this other stuff, but it looks like they're just like, oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, I was a different person if there was an engineer.
Right,
I was like, oh, you know, creamy and supportive and communicative, and I, you know, I was much better of a human. But when I was like in charge of actually engineering, and once I learned how to engineer and kind of got my wings, and that kind of became more automatic, then I became a much better husband. Second album was much better, but
yes,
not perfect, but you know.
So you had the therapist in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we did therapy between the two, from album one to album two.
Yeah.
When we did our therapy.
Yeah.
Well,
true
that
story.
That rapport with any artist, that's the secret.
It's,
I think
it's critical, and it's gonna be the thing that brings return business. Is just good. I mean, basically, people want to. And anybody who hires you, just, you know, there's a million people that can do the job, you know, any job. I mean, but the thing that gets you hired and rehired, in my experience, is just the trust. I'm coming to you with a budget and my songs, which are my babies, and I trust you because I can hand it over and mm-hmm. exhale, you know, and so.
Well, let me play another clip. I'm correct. Just 1 minute apiece. We'll play this and take a listen, and you can tell me a little bit about this
one.
All right. Cool. Let's play this one. Now, I just want to stress that that's a song. There's a lot of singing in it. I pulled out all the guitar because one of the things is you're just doing everything in the kitchen sink in there. That's just a crazy. Now, was that what you envisioned in the song? I wondered what the demo was for that one.
Well, I did say you know, because it's all about like getting away from the stresses of life and people driving you crazy. And it was like, let's just have all this like cacophony of sound, you know, the timestamp there, how you know how dated this album is the AOL dial-up that's in there. 90s, hello. but yeah, I mean, pretty much, I mean, he really, like, took that and ran with it, and he was just creative, and it's just so fun. We haven't listened to it in a long time. It's so funny to listen to
it. It's like a great lead. I mean, there's like four different parts in there, different guitars.
Yeah, and I have to give a shout out. The second solo was actually Holly's mother's husband, her stepdad. His name is Rick Robbins, and he's a great guitar player from Tulsa, and he's played with a bunch of different artists, Andy Gibb, and with George Duke, and a bunch of people. And so this album was a little bit more of a family thing. And Rick took that second solo. That, you know, I kind of had the more nasty one at first, and then Rick played the second one, and.
And you're the one that's doing the bending, and then you just shred.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the thicker kind of sound right there.
Now, was that the boogie?
That was the boogie, definitely. And
you have that because you have the wah. You have a wah thing going
probably.
On.
Probably. What stands out in my memory about that song is the fuzz stereo rhythm guitars. I took the spring out of a wah-wah pedal and just made it like half cocked, pardon my friend. and so it's just sort of got the and I think that's how they did like the Boston record, you know, like Thomas Schultz kind of made a thing where it was like,
well, Hendrix used to do that too, where he just left it, he would put it in a certain position.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did, and it was that
it gets that
of,
kind of nasal type
yeah,
of a
yeah, exactly.
tone, which is really great. It works
yeah, they,
really well.
They actually came out with a pedal years ago, which I haven't seen in a while. It's called a Q-Zone, and it's just basically a square mm-hmm. foot pedal that's just a wah-wah pedal without
it's the filter. You just dial
exactly,
it out
yeah. exactly. So it's essentially that. I don't remember on the lead, but on the rhythm of that song, that was what that was all about. So.
But real men balance the pedal. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But it's yeah, no, it's a great it's
stand
a great
on
sound.
One leg.
Well, quickly, I noticed that you brought a new pedal board, and I have to get into gear for a minute here.
Geek out.
So, tell us about this little guy, because it's a smaller one. Now, you had brought your bigger big one, but this is a kind of a cool little guy.
Yeah, this one had some a couple of different motivations behind it. One was that I just hate having, you know, unused stuff laying around, so I took a bunch of unused pedals and put it together. The other thing about it is that I wanted this specifically to fit in a in an overhead, you know, like a carry on the airplane suitcase. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be that exact size, so I like measured it out and mm-hmm. and made sure that it can literally go in the suitcase with my clothes. And I had a gig coming up. I do this R&B gig every around every Valentine's Day, where I go and I'm in the house band and play with a bunch of R&B artists from the 60s and 70s and stuff, and mm-hmm. they'll come in and do their three hits, and it's a big 2-day event, and it's a blast. I love doing it, but you know, last time I took my big pedal board, it was like, you know, $75 each flight, you know,
yeah,
like that
they
kind
get
of
expensive,
thing. So, yeah, and you can only carry on so much on a plane. So I wanted this thing to be able to go in with my clothes, you know, in my carry-on suitcase, you know, so I don't have to check a bag and I can have everything. So. I'll follow your lead. You want me to?
Yeah, tell us what you have on there.
Okay,
I'm taking pictures, so we'll
okay,
post
yeah,
those
we'll
up.
Post those later. It's a little tiny Gator metal pedal board, and the signal chain starts with a TC buffer, which is underneath. Maybe you want to get a picture of this, but the buffer pedal is underneath. Now, believe it or not, I'm not a big.
Hold on.
Yep. Holding it.
I gotta get it to focus. Mm. Hold on a second. It's not focused.
So the buffer pedal is underneath the pedal board, and that's where I plug the guitar straight into that.
Pull it back up again.
Uh-huh.
It's not seeing it. Hold on. Flip it.
Flip it good.
There we go.
So then from the buffer pedal, it goes into an old MXR Dynacomp, which is, you know, that's the compression pedal that I grew up with, and I just like it.
It has a great sound.
Yeah. And then I have an old Boss Blues driver that goes into that, And, you know, that's that, with the Les Paul especially, it's just sort of a half-crunch pedal. But, man, there is plenty of gain on this.
Those blues drivers are nice.
Man, I can turn it up, and it's plenty of gain. So it's just the one dirt pedal, if you will, on there. And then it goes into a Ernie Ball volume pedal. And then it goes into an Electro Harmonics Wiggler pedal, and I'll talk about that in a sec. Then it goes from there into a Boss Digital Delay, the DD8, where I can tap the tempo.
DD6.
Grandpa didn't have his glasses on. DD6. Okay. So, which is, you know, I've had this pedal forever, and I love it. It sounds great. The only drag about it is that it takes 2 seconds to, like, for example, if the pedal is off, you have to press it and hold it down for, like, 2 or 3 seconds for it to go into tap tempo mode. And I'm all about tap tempo delay. Oh, okay. I mean, I live by that. Like, whatever the tempo of the song is, I try to, like, make that happen. And just, you know, it's not a real quick pedal in that way, but... You know, and it has a bunch of different settings on it. You can make it sound like a, you know, just a slap echo, mm-hmm. like an old, you know, just like for rockabilly and stuff. But I usually use it just kind of a mild delay in the tempo of the song. Mm-hmm. And then it goes into the New Neighbor wet pedal, which is my reverb. So it's just sort of meat and potatoes. And I'll talk about this Wiggler pedal, which is really cool. I mean, I'm not a big effects geek, as it were, but you know, when I want something, I want it. I love having like you know, swirly and phasey kind of sounds. Mm-hmm. I much prefer that over like chorus pedals and stuff like that. And this particular pedal, I bought from the widow of Andrew Gold, the late great Andrew Gold, and so it just sort of has this incredible sentimental value to me. So, and if you're not familiar with him, he was the
I know who he
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you know
he's the
yeah.
Go ahead and show us a little bit of this.
Cool, yeah.
And he's using the blue Les Paul.
The blue Les Paul. All right, so this is, let's see, this is just the Dynacomp with a little reverb, I guess. The blues driver in.
It's got a nice, sweet sound to it.
Yeah, it just kind of has a tone control on it, and I like that. I just prefer kind of a darker, thicker kind of sound, you know. If I want something more biting, you know, the treble pickup on the guitar seems to do it.
There, while you're switching to the other one, there's a mod for that. Blues driver,
cool.
Where they put germanium transistors.
Oh.
It mellow. It sounds pretty mellow. Yours sounds really mellow, but it makes it a little soft, like a sweeter tone to it.
Cool. Yeah, I just dialed the tone back, and it seems to be fine. So, so then, you know, with a little delay on it, I guess. So I can just tap the tempo.
Yeah,
I love those tails.
Now, this Wiggler.
Wiggler, okay, yeah, let's get into this. So, my favorite thing about this is just the... it has two modes, basically, and it actually has two... just a side note, it has two 12AX7 preamp tubes in it, so it's got this warm kind of analog sound, but... It has two modes, basically, like a pitch modulation mode and then also just sort of standard tremolo mode. And I just sort of like to try to set it where I can quickly reach down on a gig and go from one to the other. So here's, like, for example, one of the pitch modulation modes, and it's sort of like a Univibe kind of sound, like a Robin Trower or a early Frampton kind of. It's got that sound, you know, which I dig.
Now, you don't have the blues driver on, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So it's the tubes in that are distorted. That are blooming in there. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I just dig that.
That's a really nice sound.
Yeah, I dig it.
It's like a subtle univibe.
Yeah, and then this one is supposed to be more like a Leslie, you know? Darker, and it's a little bit more like a Leslie, and you can adjust the speed and the intensity of it, so let's get a little more. That's similar but different, just another flavor of it. And it has another two more modes of modulation. That one's real dark. It's supposed to be like from a Wurlitzer piano kind of.
Yeah, sense. It's the other type of volume tremolo as opposed to the warble.
Yeah, I love that stuff. So then it's got, and of course you can go nuts. Like if I go back to the univibe setting, you can go nuts with like the intensity. You know, get all kinds of weird. It has a standard tremolo mode.
Is there any other tremolo mode?
I think that the four modes that you can dial in just gives a different tones, basically. But, of course, you can go.
No, I'm trying to. It's kind of in between the Blackface Fender type of tremolo and the old, the cream-colored. The brown face.
I would agree.
It's in between because the brown face actually warbles the tone a little bit, whereas the other one's almost like a volume, on and off.
Yeah, exactly. And
this one does something to the. It kind of warbles it just slightly, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. I have on my big pedal board, as you saw, the Empress tremolo, which has all these different waveforms that you can pick, like the triangle wave, square wave, and sine, all that, which I like having that versatility. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't, but, it's just for meat and potatoes tremolo. It's great. excuse me. And I just try to set it so that, I can, if I want that univibe sound. Quickly reach down and switch it to tremolo, then it's a usable tremolo that's sort of meat and potatoes that fits a lot of styles. And but definitely love this thing.
No, the tubes on it make it gives it a nice character to it, and it's again, he's not using the blues driver. That breaking up in there is from the tubes on that pedal.
Yeah, exactly.
Still made? Does Electro-Harmonix still make that?
I think so. Yeah, I think they do. You just have to fish for it. It's not hard to find, but it's not an everyday catalog.
It's a very cool little pedal.
I know, I love it. And the sentimental value of it, I don't know how much Andrew Gould used this particular pedal, but I don't know. We've become friends with his wife, and she's lovely, sweet person, and it just means something to me. So, So, yeah,
and
that's
it's real, and the footprint is really small.
Yeah.
It's really not that big,
yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, like I said, it's designed to go in my suitcase, you know, that I take on a plane.
You're just missing your wah-wah.
Yeah. Actually, on the gig that I did, I just took a freestanding one and plugged
and
it
just
in.
Just plug it in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not on the board, but I just use it with batteries. Yeah, it doesn't even have a tuner on it. I just use my iPhone to tune or whatever, or a clip-on tuner, and yeah, I'm digging it.
Wow, it's a great sounding system.
Yeah.
Now we're getting close to the end. I told you it would go by really fast, but I want to talk a little bit about this this concert that's coming up. And actually, I'm going to ask Lori to give the dates and the time.
Sure.
Go ahead and do it, and then I'm going to ask him
so,
about it.
So the CD actually was released last year.
That's right, yeah.
And as I became friends with Troy and Holly, I sort of encouraged doing a live thing, you know? So we spent a few months planning, and we decided to do it at Vitello's upstairs at the Eastbot Lounge in Studio City. And the date is Friday, June 2nd, which is coming right up now. Boy, that went fast.
I know.
So we encourage reservations. I know there's quite a few reservations already made. You can just go on to Vitello's, I think it's vitellosrestaurant.com, and reserve your table and see a great show. And Troy will let you know what who's actually on the lineup. Holly and Susan are going to open. And yeah.
Well, Holly and my dear friend, Julie Silver, fantastic singer-songwriter, and I've produced a lot of her albums, they're kind of teaming up to duet. It's sort of a one-time, hopefully not a one-time, but it's you know, it's unique, and I just couldn't be more happy about that because I love them both dearly. So I'm excited about that. And then in my band, my son Taylor is going to be playing drums, and Chaz Frictell is playing bass. Chaz was with Michael McDonald for about 18 years and played for many years with Chuck Mangione and Christopher Cross and America. And he's a very good friend of ours, great player, great singer. Side note, Chaz was the one who sang the theme song to Saved by the Bell. That is him. that is our Chaz.
Claim to fame.
Chazzy Chaz. But he's a phenomenal bass player, and we just love him, and so I'm happy to have him. And then
he scats when he does bass solos,
he
so
does.
That's fun.
So he breathes also.
That's right.
Yeah. And then a keyboard player friend of ours, Bob Emmett, who's a dude around town, played with just about everybody, and he's a great producer in his own right, and you know, he's just one of those guys, you can't fool him, man. He just, you know, knows a bajillion songs and just, he just knows his way around, man.
So you're going to just play guitar?
Only guitar, yeah.
Only guitar on it.
Yeah.
But now, let me ask you real quick, and I want to play, I want to play two cuts before we're done tonight. But I wanted to ask you is, how did, after doing an album where you're recording it, with your layering and you're doing different guitars, how are you doing it live? Because there's a lot of guitars on here.
That's true. I find, you know, well, first of all, you know, I'm the opposite of hard-nosing the, or, you know, hard-lining the guys about, like, copying the records. Like, no, man, I just want to get up there, read the charts, have fun, and let them be them.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that in a live situation, you know, because it's live and, you know, a lot of sound, a lot of air gets sucked up. You know, we don't need all those little. I don't need to copy all those little guitar overdubs that that are important for a record to just, you know, as we say, ear candy. But in a live situation, I think less is more. Let the guys do their thing. I want to do my thing and just have it be spontaneous and. The space will get filled up.
You know,
so. When you have great players, you don't really have to worry too much.
Yeah,
that's true.
Everybody's
they'll
listening.
Be sensitive to your originality. And
where there isn't that overdub, you know, for example, on the record, you know, the guys will have more room to kind of like take some chances live, and I want that. So, you know,
very cool.
So, yeah.
Now, we're out of time, and I'm only going to be able to play one cut of Shop Talk to take us out. But before I do that, you got to show us the Martin.
Ah.
I had you bring this Martin. You gotta play this.
He was
playing it earlier, and it just sounds beautiful.
Yeah, this really is a beautiful guitar. I don't know what year exactly it is. This I actually bartered for a client of mine, our friend Steve Dropkin. Steve, how you doing? Maybe you could pipe in and tell me the year of this thing. But this has been my number one guitar for, God, since the late 90s, my number one acoustic. Awesome open D string.
So you're just using a drop D there?
No, it's open. Standard.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. It's just great. The overtones of that thing are just beautiful.
Yeah, with new strings, man, this thing is really, really hard to beat, man. And it's over the years, it's required very little maintenance. And the pickup, which I'm not using now, but the pickup sounds fantastic. I always get compliments on the tone of it. But
No, and what you were hearing was coming from his mic that he's talking through. It's just the tone is there. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful sound guitar.
Yeah.
We're out of time. I knew we'd run out of time, but I want to mention the album's Shop Talk, and I recommend you guys get it. It's some of the best guitar playing I've heard.
Oh,
and there's some really great stuff,
you.
And he's doing some really cool things with the effects and getting great tones out of the different amps and stuff. And it's really just tasty stuff, and. The albums that you did with, can you give me the names of the ones with Holly?
Well, one is called Life Goes On. That's the first one. And then the second one is called Tales from the Green Room. And that one, Tales from the Green Room, the most recent, is for sure, on Spotify and out there on CD Baby and all that kind
so
of stuff.
Yeah.
I think they're both on iTunes.
Oh, are they?
So.
On iTunes?
Cool.
They're both
on
iTunes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave us with the first cut of it, of the album Ground Zero, but I just want to thank you, and I want to thank Holly. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Thanks for having me.
This is great.
Glad to support Troy. Excited. I'm excited about this album. I've been telling him to do it for 27 years.
That is true.
Well, it was
so
you were right on.
I was nagging him this whole time.
Thank you for getting him to do it.
Yeah.
You're
yes.
welcome.
Yeah. And Lori, thank you so much for.
Thank you, Lori.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Anyway, everybody have a great week. Check this out. And don't forget Vitello's June 2nd, the eSpot Lounge. And we're going to leave with Ground Zero. This is a great cut. This is one of my favorites on the album. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.